That was Michael McDermott from Out From Under. Here is Roger Badish out from the studio just down the hall.
Yeah, it's a lot shorter walk this time.
All right, I have to ask you, because we catch up sometimes between shows, or we're fawning over Lori Shelley or something.
Please.
And Roger knows that. The great thing about you, you know, like half the people who come in here, you're either friends on Facebook or you've known them for a while. I mean, which I think is a great thing.
Well, I don't know that I know them until they're on with you. That's
you go, wait a minute, that's my old girlfriend. Yeah. Wait a minute.
And then I find out later on Facebook that she talked to you about Heron Camp.
Yeah.
I went to school with the daughter of the founder of Heron Camp.
Get out of here.
I went to school in Evanston, Janice
of
Gavin.
Course. Yeah. Of course, of course.
And when I found out, like, on Monday, and I saw Janice type something, I go, wait a minute. How do you guys? Oh my gosh!
It goes back to that whole Chicago is a small town.
Oh, it is.
But I haven't asked you yet about. We haven't talked since we've moved into these new studios. Oh, what do you're obviously a fan. I see on Facebook you take photos and stuff. Is this as good as a radio studio will ever be? Given that the future is probably.
Yeah.
You know, having a radio studio in your, you know, something as big as a phone.
That's already there, in my opinion. I think this facility, beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I think it's geared towards the future. It's ready for whatever the future holds in radio broadcasting, internet broadcasting, whatever you want to call it. It is still broadcasting. We're reaching a large group of people, whether they're on terrestrial radio, whether they're on the internet, whether they're listening on the phone, even though we're still talking to them one to one. That's always been radio's appeal. And my own personal opinion is that no matter what, radio, this type of communication with the general public, I think, will always be there because there will always be a need for it, whatever format that need takes.
Wow, that's very interesting. You have to put that in your book. I think when you go
save the tape,
future.
Aubrey. Well, I'll have to transcribe.
Yeah, save all this tape and we'll just transcribe much of it. How is, I mean, Roger Badish's book was born, and sort of born on this show when I sort of browbeat him into. After listening to one story, one compelling, fascinating story after another, I literally said, because I felt the need to have it, I said, you should write a book. And
I kind of hemmed and hawed for a while.
You did.
Yeah.
But then, well, because also at the time, your Facebook posts had the feel of diary-like chapters from your life, and you were obviously enjoying it. Now you have publishers who are interested in the book. Mm-hmm. You haven't been doing much work this summer, you told me.
Yeah, it's our son came back from Spain. He had been working in Spain all of last school year, and he's back for the summer. Well, my writing space, and I'm one who needs that space.
It's his bedroom.
It's his bedroom, yeah. So he's been in there, and... Well, I absconded his bedroom while he was away and made it my writing space. I have two writing spaces. Both of them, I can be away from people. One of them is in the kitchen, our little kitchenette table, but that's because I'm typing when no one's awake, early in the morning when I first wake up. Well, my thoughts aren't really flowing book-wise at that point. So once everyone wakes up, I now need a separate place away from everyone. And so I'll pick up the laptop and bring it into the bedroom and sit down and get everything set up. I've got the air purifier in there. I've got the fan blowing. I got my
a bottle of bourbon and a pack of Camels.
I'm not at the bourbon yet.
And a pack of Camels.
Yeah, it could be.
Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah. And that's where I do my writing, and you and I have talked about my unique, I don't know if it's unique yet because I haven't seen anyone do this for a book, but my unique resource material other than my brain.
Yeah.
And I have finished, at least the first draft finished, because I'm sure if I went back and started to read each one now, I'd
sure, go, but I, as I yeah, told you before, yeah, I think what you're doing is really the way to do it is to plow through
yeah,
and get something on paper, because you can always go back.
You can always go back. So I have finished my chapter on our lives in Las Vegas, and I have finished the chapter of my 20 years of teaching.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not writing it, but I can't remember if I told you this last time, but I have asked former students to send in their first impressions of me.
No,
yeah,
you didn't tell me that, because I think that is a brave. It is a very very brave but fascinating idea. Have you gotten any?
Yes, I've gotten about 10 of them,
and
most of them kind of were what I expected, actually.
Which is, what did you expect?
Well, I
Mr.
expected
Bettish,
them.
You were such a great teacher.
No, no. I fully expected all of them to start out, who the hell is this bald-headed, and at one point, ponytailed.
Oh, my God. Right.
Mr. Know-It-All, who is making us read this book and take these notes and. And the unique thing was, at least at Chicago Vocational and at Clemente High School, where I was teaching a vocational program, as opposed to one semester of radio
yeah,
or one semester
yeah,
of TV where kids could come in and out, I had them for 3 years. I had the same students for 3 years.
That's remarkable.
So I would teach sophomores, juniors, and seniors each semester, but they were the same ones for 3 years. So you can understand how their perspective over 3 years might change.
Yeah.
And the writings, the recollections that I'm getting in, and now it's been, so my last class at Chicago Vocational was 2012. And the first one was in 2000. So I'm getting students from 2000. I have not seen them since they graduated 2000.
Or been in touch with them at
all?
Well,
I have. I've got a lot of them on Facebook. A lot of them I have friended. I never had them as friends on Facebook while they were my students. It was a rule I had.
Yeah.
But I knew that their friends were some of my former students, so they could see, you know, post
right,
or whatever.
I think that's fascinating.
So I'm getting a lot of those, and I just, and so I'm copying them and putting them into the chapter, and then kind of, you know, formatting them a little bit, because some of them are free form.
Yeah, of course. Sure,
and
sure, sure.
I've been brought to tears several times, and I've had my wife look at them, it's extremely moving.
But that's what, you may not have expected that, but that is what one gets in the profession of teaching yeah, to do.
If
to
one cares work, about teaching because it's teaching, as opposed to teaching because I can make a lot of money and
yeah,
this and that, and I got short
and
hours.
Get summers off.
Well, you don't get summers off, trust me.
Oh, I know.
Don't get me started. Don't get me started. But, if you really go into it with your heart and a desire to enlighten the young future leaders of our world, then you will be continually amazed.
And rewarded.
You will continually be rewarded and emotionally involved in a movement that other people can't experience.
Wow. Yeah, please keep this tape, because that verbatim should be in that book somewhere. We got to take a break, and we'll
okay,
be back in 3 minutes with Roger Bettish.
A gentle you and me on the Celtic Sea.
That is the last time today you will hear Michael McDermott from his CD Out From Under. I've got never enough time with Roger Bettish, but he certainly made me increasingly want to get this book. I mean, he's writing a book based on what I think is one of the most fascinating lives of anybody I've encountered. He's been a teacher. He's been a press aide to mayors of Chicago. He put in the stereo equipment in Harold Washington's. Yeah. In Harold Washington's apartment building with those parrots outside in the tree. And he's been a newsman. You've had a wonderfully varied career. And I hope also you will do the sort of technological, because you taught radio for a while, too.
Yeah.
And you were so articulate just 10, 15 minutes ago about how you see this station as a place in as being built for the future, mm-hmm. which... To me, I can't tell that at all.
Well, I think it. I mean, you've done radio. I mean,
sit and talk in a microphone. I know, and read a book
and I know, and but you've been doing it a long time. You've seen it changed, both as a user of the radio on this side and a user as a regular listener, right. No matter what station you might listen to. And so you have a feel for radio. You have a feel for broadcasting.
Well, I have a feel for the. What you've always taught me is that. This is the intimate medium.
It is, extremely so.
Yeah.
People, whether they want to admit it or not, and this is radio since day one, since 1920, radio has always been, we call it broadcasting, but it's always one-on-one.
Yep.
People who listen to us, no matter how young or old, believe that my voice is talking directly to them, voice is directing to them. If they don't like your voice, if they don't like what you're saying, if they don't like your views, they will let you know it, as they would someone in their own family.
Yeah.
If they like what you're saying, and if they like your voice, and if they like the medium, the delivery system, you won't hear about it.
Exactly.
That's unless you go to, you know, like there are some hosts on the radio who have millions of lovers and have been doing it for decades and decades. And when they go someplace, it's like, oh, there's so-and-so. And sure. But it's on it's an expanding universe because of the internet.
Yeah.
But it's still a local thing. You know, I wore my hat, my WGN radio hat, when we went over to Europe 7-8 years ago. Not one single person said, oh, hey, WGN Radio Chicago, how you doing?
Yeah. That was Al Capone.
Not even Chicago. Nothing. No one even asked, where are you from? Nothing. And we were in Milan, we were in Rome, we were in London.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks, nothing. But in Chicago, I'll go golf at the golf course up by me, play 9 holes, and with just kind of join a group of people that are up. And by the 6th hole, they're going, oh, you're Roger Banish? I know that voice. All right.
What was Wally Phillips really like?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell him, talk to Aubrey. But yeah, it's... And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I tell myself, wow, somebody's actually listening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not that I wouldn't do this if no one was listening. You know how much I love broadcasting.
Oh, I do.
So when someone does do that, it's a little kick. It's a little like, wow, somebody's actually listening. You know? I'm reaching that one person.
Yeah.
And that is a big part of what we do here.
What do you think, Roger, and maybe you'll get into this in the book, too, but about this increasing, this whole fake news to-do, which I think is a passing kind of fancy of a certain guy in the White House, but the diminished kind of regard that certain quarters of the public feel about the media, it's not hurtful to me. I still have great faith in the media.
Mm-hmm.
I think I still know where to go to get real news.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think fake news is an aberration to me. How do you? I mean, you are a newsman. I mean, I do work for a newspaper,
right.
But this show is not you know, my show is not. You were delivering news.
Right.
And when you hear all the falderal about fake news and don't believe anything about this and the media stinks, how does that affect you?
I'd be dishonest if I didn't say it upset me.
Yeah, good.
But I think there are two, I don't want to say justifications for it. There's two ways to look at this. I will make you a bet that everyone who believes the fake news scenario reads a real newspaper, watches a real TV news show, and listens to a real radio newscast wherever they live. And to them, they don't see that what they do, whether it's left or right or center,
right.
Doesn't matter.
I agree.
That's what they do. That's a part of their life, and they don't see that, what they use, the news services they use, as fake news. It's everything outside of their world that they consider fake news.
Yeah.
But you go to another town. You come from one town to another town in this country, and you will get the local newspaper and read the local sports, check the local weather, check the local places to go to, and read the local news to find out what's happening in that town. You will, in that town, watch the local news and or the national news. And you might listen to a local radio station or your own station on the internet or on your phone.
Yeah.
So there's that angle.
It's interesting.
I think the other angle is that this has been, I don't know, if you're the wordsmith, fomented?
Yeah.
Is that a correct?
Yeah.
Okay. The other angle is this has been fomented by the overwhelming rise of delivery platforms.
Yep. No.
Every person.
Question.
You can rightfully say that if I were to take my phone out right now and go on Facebook Live, that's news.
Yeah.
It's not news.
Right.
It's me going on Facebook Live because I can.
Well, I could go on, get my phone, go on Twitter and say, those of you listening to Roger Bedish now would be really amazed to know that he is really 7 feet, 1 inch tall. Period.
Yeah. And those who know me would laugh till they had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Those who don't know me would sit there and go, oh, yeah, Rogan says,
I can't
wow, he's what?
See, that's you're so right about the fomenting of this thing. It's so all over the place that I sometimes wish that there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter. But because we are in this media business, you know, hyper alert to numbers of followers, where you know, where people in this town buy the scandals of buying followers, it would increase your brand. I mean, you and I are, I guess, we're old school. Do your job, do it honestly, and call the guys you taught in high school and see what they think about how you did. That is a great element to the book. When where's your son? How long is your son going to be here?
We're not sure.
Okay.
He's in Iceland right now for a friend's wedding.
Oh, so wow.
I'm back in the room.
Hey,
I've started my next chapter.
Which is? Next
chapter will be when I started. I came back to Chicago. So this is a chapter following our time in Las Vegas when I came back to Chicago and went to work at WKQX Q101, for about 2 years when it was over the merchandise mark.
Yeah.
And so I've only written about 3 pages. I've gotten to the point of where I first walked into the 19th floor into the, I don't know if you've ever been over at the old NBC.
I sure was.
On the 19th floor, you walk in and there's this, oh my gosh, from before, like the 1940s, low lighting, rich dark wood, big cushy chairs in the lobby. And then when I would walk down the hallway and I specifically talk about where each room was and where, what side of the building I was on and everything, it just all my first impressions. And then I've even contacted someone who a lot of our listeners might remember from the Chicago area, Dave McBride, because as I've kind of, as we get older, we don't, yeah. You know, we lose a little thought. But I asked Dave, who I worked with at Q101, he came in after me, what is the name of that person that... the first name I think is this, and he says, well, I don't know any this, but I do remember. I go, yeah, that's who I was thinking of.
It's so great that you can do this. We are following on this program, which is called After Hours, the ongoing adventures of Roger, that I call Roger Badish Writes His Biography. And it gets more fascinating every time we talk, and it gets more fascinating just to know the way you think.
Thank you, sir. I got to run really and do a newscast. Pleasure.
Oh, my God, you do the news
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get into Phil, that one day. You do the news at this station? Oh, I thought there was another Roger Badish. Now, someone will say there are two Roger Badishes. You're 7 feet one tall.